You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, I'm going to try real hard not to mention Obamacare, except in passing, because we have some good news for a change. The advance estimate, and I need to emphasize, it's the advance estimate for the real gross domestic product, GDP, which is the final goods and services that the United States economy produces, actually went up to 2.8%. That's good news because that's for the third quarter that ended the 30 September. Now, it's not terrific because the historical trend rate for the economy over many decades after the war has been about 3%, 3.1%, depending on which study or estimate you look at and where the beginning and the ending cutoff dates are. The economy typically grows around 3%, 3.1, 2, 3, 3.3. I tend to use 3.3, but to keep it simple, 3%. So you can see we're below the trend rate even for the advance estimate, but it was higher than the second quarter, which is at 2.5. You see, the economy is growing about 25% less than even the trend rate. We need growth rates of 4, 5, 6, 7% to get the unemployment rate down below, ideally below 4%, to be the normal range typically for economy that's booming, is near full employment, is between 3 and 4%. We're at 7.2%. And we're going to have tomorrow, the Bureau of Labor Statistics will be releasing its monthly report in terms of what the unemployment rate is and how many jobs were non-farm payroll jobs were created. And I'll be going over that as well. So we have some economic news, and it's a little bit late in the sense that usually you would have gotten this last week, but because of the government shutdown, many of these economic statistics are a week to two behind. So we have the real GDP numbers that are looking better. I mean, I like the trend, but what concerns me is the Federal Reserve has kept the interest rate low since December 2008. It's been at what's called a near zero rate. That's been at 25 basis points of 0.25%. Now, that's the rate for the federal funds rate that banks, that's the overnight, typically it's the overnight rate for banks. It's not a rate you can get, but it's important to the banks because that's cheap. That's easy money, or what's called an accommodative. That was the word I was looking for. And it's very accommodative. I think that rate is going to have to go up because typically it's between 3, 4, 5, 6%. It's really low, and that is the policy of the Fed that's keeping it low. Now, I bring that up is because of that, it means people, for example, if you're going to buy a car or going to buy or lease a car, what you're finding is many of the auto companies have very, very low rates for that. And that will continue until such time as the monetary policy change and we get back to a more normal situation where your federal funds rate will be above 3%, 3, 4, 5% range. And that will happen. It's just a matter of when it will happen because this is really compressing. It's not a free market rate. That's what I'm trying to say. If we didn't have a group of PhD economists in Washington manipulating, and that's what they're doing, price fixing, if you will, the price of money, as seen by the federal funds rate, interest rates would be much higher across the board. Because we have what's called a term structure of interest rates, which is a fancy way to saying, depending on how long the debt is, the rates tend to go up. You normally have what's called an upward sloping yield curve. In other words, the longer you're willing to invest, you'll get a higher rate. Short-term rates tend to be low. Your midterm rates tend to be a little higher. And those that are long-term tend to be the highest. And what I'm talking about is obviously for Treasury securities or the debts of the United States. Now, why am I getting into this? Because of the low rates, it's very attractive for people, including myself, I've taken advantage of this, to go out and either buy or lease a car. But what's happening? If you listen, it's not that car dealerships are not having a good year. They're having a very good year. But it's slowed down. And I'm not surprised about this because many, many people that wanted to take advantage of these low rates have. There are just so many people that are in a financial situation that it makes sense for them to do it. And they know, I know, that the rates are going to go back up. At which time, when that happens, what I'm fully anticipating is you're going to see a slowdown in the sales and leasing of cars. And I think you're seeing it now because a lot of pent-up demand, if you will, has been satisfied. At least that's the way I view it. But we've had these low rates starting in 2008. So that's 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, going on 5 years of this. That's abnormal, folks. That's not the normal situation at all. Now, it's not unique to the United States. All central banks across the world are doing that. What they're trying to do is to avoid the economy going into another recession, if not depression. They don't want deflation. And I'm looking at this report from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. They're responsible for publishing, and this was published this morning at 8:30 Eastern Time in the morning. The report was embargoed into then. It was released then. And the big news was the 2.8% third quarter 2013 number, as well as I think this is the second or third estimate for the second quarter of real GDP, which is 2.5%, which is good, which is definitely better than the first quarter, which was under I think it was 1.1%, and the fourth quarter of last year was almost negative. It was at 0.1. But what I'm leading up to is I think this quarter is going to be a repeat of the quarter in 2012. We're really slowing down. We're still stagnating. We're sort of going sideways. And what's disturbing about it, really disturbing about it, about this recovery, and remember, this recovery started in the third quarter of 2009. In July of 2009, we came out of the recession and the economy started to grow. So we've been growing since then. We've had one quarter of negative growth, but that's more a statistical. They've been making many, many changes to the GDP numbers. So what I'm looking at the chart right now, and I need to mention this. I will be publishing this probably today, this evening, after this show's over. And the way you listen to the show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's www.pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's my blog, and at the very top you'll have links to the shows. At the very top you have the most recent shows, and then below that you have a complete archive of all my shows. So, and that's the way most of my listeners listen to this show. Because they're taking courses at Richland College or they're on the staff of Richland College. So they don't really have time during the day to listen to this show. And my show is on, it's Monday through Thursday from 4 to 5. The problem we've had this week is two problems. One, every month on Tuesday, the first Tuesday, we have all the shows get pre-exempted in my time slot because we have a board of directors meeting of the college of the, well, it's not the college, it's the district, the Dallas Community College, Dallas County Community College District. That's the DCCCD that you hear in the beginning of the program. They have their board of trustees meetings, and what our radio station does, our web radio station does, is broadcast it for mainly the staff. Very few students listen to it, but some of the staff do, some of the administration does. And my show is always, because my time slot is on that day happens to be 3 to 4, there's a lady that, so my show is typically 4 to 5 Monday through Thursday. And then on Fridays, it's 3 to 5, and sometimes I have special editions that go along. So if you're new to show, I like to at least give you an idea. And what I'm trying to do, probably it'll be the start of next semester, is to have a two-hour show from 3 to 5, 5 days a week. What I'm experimenting with right now is to really ramp up to that. I've always had, for the last year or so, a weekly show. Initially, it was a one-hour show, and we've had different days. You see, I have to schedule my show based on what other students are doing, and each student gets at least 1 hour. So I can't hog all the time, and so I've selected late in the day because that's usually the time slots that students don't want. They either want it in the morning or early afternoon, but late in the day they want to either go home or they're coming to campus. So that's why I'm shooting for a two-hour show, 3 to 5, Monday through Friday, and hopefully next semester I'll be able to do that. Because we do have people giving shows, but what happens is most are giving music shows, where they'll play music that they're interested in and have some commentary between the songs that they're playing, which is fine. But we'll have somebody do, I'm the only one that really does a regular talk show. And the reason why is I'm trying to get a nationally syndicated commercial radio gig, if you will, show. I'm not really that interested in local shows at all, because what my background is financial. It's largely in the financial services industry. My degrees are in economics, business administration, finance, as well as many of my certifications. So I have a lot of knowledge about economics, both from a practical point of view, having my own company for over 20 years, as well as working in the private sector. And because that means I'm a lot older, I have a lot more to bring to the table. I really could not, for example, do this show when I was in college. So because most of the students are typically in their late teens or early 20s, it's not unexpected that the type of format that they want is music. Occasionally we have a few of the students that will have a one-hour show that's talk-related, but it could be on religion, it could be on culture, it could be on games, whatever their hot button is. I have a little different perspective. I view this as practice. So I get used to being able to prepare, present, and produce a show that's a daily show. And what you need to understand, we don't have call-ins. I wish we did, but we don't have a large enough audience to make that very practical. Because even your nationally syndicated shows, and definitely your local shows, they have much larger audience. I'm talking typically millions of listeners, at least a million. Now, some local will have several hundred thousand. Well, we're not even commercial radio broadcasting over the air. We're web radio or internet web. Some will describe it as internet radio or web radio. That's how we initially do the broadcast. But most people that do that, including me, record the show. And then what we do after the show, we'll do a little editing. What I typically do is I'll edit out the music in the beginning and the end of the show. And then occasionally I will cough during the show, so I'll edit that out. So I'm sort of giving a little background on it. But most of my listeners, 99.9999%, listen to podcasts. And the way you do that is to go to prompopops.wordpress.com. So enough of the background. So the good news is the economy is still growing, but it's really not growing at a pace that's doing much good if you're unemployed or part-time. What we really need is economy growing at 4, 5, 6%, because if you want to reduce the unemployment rate by just 0.1%, in other words, 0.1%, what you have to do every month is create about 300,000 jobs. That's every month. And the reason for that, somewhere between 130,000 and 150,000 jobs are necessary just to keep up with the growing population of the United States. Now, for example, the population of the United States today is around 318,000. And every year we are a growing unlike some nations, that the population is actually going down, our population is going up, which is good. And that's what you need, because one of the drivers of growth is a growing population, which we have. So you need, just to keep up with what's called new entrants to the labor force, is about somewhere between 130,000 to 150,000 new jobs just to take care of that. And those are estimates. That's a broad range, but I'm comfortable with that. I tend to be on the high end. Some economists are on the low end. Some are in the middle. But that's what you need. Now, that doesn't mean the unemployment rate's going to go down. On top of that, you need anywhere from 150,000 to 160,000 additional jobs to reduce the unemployment rate by 0.1%. And that's a very good rule of thumb. You need about 300,000 new jobs, and you're going to see this tomorrow as to what the economy is doing in terms of non-farm payroll. You see what the Bureau of Labor Statistics does. Every month they do surveys, both what's called a household survey and a business establishment survey. And based on those surveys, they will publish the unemployment number, which comes from the household survey, as well as the number of non-farm payroll jobs that were created. And that's from the establishment survey or the business survey. And based on that, you'll hear what you're going to hear tomorrow, and you'll hear it on the news probably in the morning or definitely in the afternoon, that the unemployment rate has either gone up or down. I think it's probably not going to change. I don't really try to predict these numbers because they do bounce around. But here's what you need to know. Over the last year, and this is based on the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers, the U.S. economy has produced approximately 185,000 jobs per month. 185,000 jobs. So that's adequate to keep up with population. Unfortunately, that's way below the 300,000 that you truly need to reduce the unemployment rate. So you're probably aware that the unemployment numbers have been going down. They have been going down. No doubt about it. How can that be then? Because I just said you need 300,000. Well, the reason for it is many people have left the labor force. They're discouraged. So what happens is when they do the survey, they ask the people several questions. And one of the questions is, in the last 4 weeks, have you searched for a job? And many people will say, no, I haven't. I've done it prior to that. I'll probably do it next month or 2 months from now. But I've been looking. I've sent resumes out. I've filled out applications. I've knocked on doors. I can't find a job. I'm looking for a full-time job. The only jobs I can find are part-time. So they get, if they can find that. And the other problem is there are many, many job applicants for a single job. So it's not that there's not job openings. For example, I was driving in, and I noticed this because I used to store some of my books and stuff, if you will, at one of these storage places, and I saw a sign. I don't know if it was true or not, but the what it said is we're looking for people to hire. Now, I can't remember, has that always been there? And it probably has. I don't think this is a new sign. If it was, that's good. The point I'm trying to make is, yeah, you're always going to see advertisements for jobs. What you don't see, and I point this out because there are people working. I said, well, I got a job, and I congratulate, good for you. But the problem today is you need to look not only at the unemployment rates, but how many people are really participating in the labor force. And over 90 million people are not participating in the labor. That's high. And the number you need to look at is the labor participation rate. Ideally, what you'd like to see is the unemployment rate going down, down, and down, and the labor participation rate going up, up, and up, so it's in the range of 66 to 67% or even higher. What you typically find is, what you're finding right now, the labor participation rate is below 64%. I believe the number is 63.3%. It's one of the lowest in over 35 years. And the reason for that is people are leaving the labor force. They're what's called the broad category is marginally attached. And that consists of really two major groups. People that have part-time jobs for economic reasons. what that means is they don't want a part-time job, even though they're working at a part-time job. They're looking for full-time employment. That is underutilization of the labor force. And there are millions of people in that situation. Off the top of my head, I think it's about 7 or 8 million. In addition to that, you have people that are discouraged. It's a little over that number, and it's a short-term discouraged. Because what you also need to keep in mind is the Department of Labor, in the Clinton years, changed the definition of unemployment. And just a background, you used to have 7 definitions of unemployment, and they were labeled U1, U2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. The number you hear on the news is what's called the U3 rate, or the headline rate, or the official unemployment rate. That's the low number. The economists typically look at the U6 rate, which takes into account the fact that you have people that are marginally attached. Now, that's under 14%. I think it's around, I want to say 12.8. We'll find out tomorrow, and I'll get you the most current number. See, I usually presented the labor report every month. Once a month, I'll have one segment devoted to that. But I wanted to link several things together, but I wanted to give you a sense of what's going on. So the economy is growing, which is good. I think this is what we've had. The economy started growing in the third quarter of, that's July, August, and September. It started growing in the third quarter of 2009. So that's 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 13. Let me do that again. 10, 11, 12, 13. That's 4 years. So we've had 16 quarters of positive economic growth. Actually, it's 15, but that's good. What we don't want is negative growth. And according to this chart, we had some negative growth in 2011. That was the last time. We were very close to it, though, the last quarter of last year. And if you listen to the show, I've been predicting another recession. I'm not very good at predicting. I'll be the first one to say this. But we're overdue for another recession. And I think the only reason why we're not in one now and seeing negative numbers is because of this easy monetary policy of the Federal Reserve. And if you listen to the financial press, the topic of discussion is, when will the Federal Reserve start easing back? Now, they've told us, and what am I talking about? The Fed today buys approximately $85 billion of both Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities issued by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And those are, as it says, they're mortgage-backed securities. And why do they do that? What the Federal Reserve is doing is financing the federal government that has been running deficits. The final numbers for fiscal year 2013 came out, I believe, is October 30th, only a little over a week ago, and the deficit was down. That was the good news, and we had higher than predicted tax revenues. That's why the deficit was down, but it's still over $688 billion. And that's better, because the prior years, 9, 10, 11, 12, they were all over $1 trillion. So the trend is right, but the problem is it's way too high, way too high. So what the Federal Reserve has become is a lender, not of last resort, but a lender or buyer would be a better way to say it, a buyer of first resort of Treasury securities. See, Treasury securities are in demand. There's a great demand across the world because the Treasury market is the largest security market in the world in terms of its sheer size. And most of that is because of the increases in the national debt, both in terms of bills, notes, and bonds, in terms of the various maturities from short-term to mid-term to long-term securities. That's a huge market. And usually the people that invest in that market are financial institutions, such as investment companies, mutual funds, insurance companies, as well as wealthy individuals, and not just from the United States, but all over the world. So when you get in a highly uncertain environment, either because of war or because of potential worldwide recession, capital flees. Hot money will go to one place hot money goes to is to Treasury securities. So there is a demand for Treasury securities, but it's not sufficient or adequate if it was not for the Federal Reserve buying every month roughly $45 billion of Treasury securities. Now, the talk on financial investment-type talk radio shows, the hot topic is, when will the Federal Reserve start tapering back its purchases of Treasury securities? Now, my answer is never. People look at me kind of strangely. I don't think they have an exit strategy. And they say that because if the economy goes in the recession, and it's only a matter of time, folks, something is going to put the U.S. economy back into a recession. Because most growth periods are typically from 3 to 5 years. Occasionally, they'll go maybe as long as 7 or longer, but typically it's 3 to 5, maybe as long as 7. Well, we've had the anniversary. This July was the 4th year. We're in our 5th year. The longer this goes, the more likely, the higher the probability is the U.S. economy will go into another recession. Now, I don't want that, but the reason why I think it's going to happen is we've been following the wrong economic policies, both from fiscal policy in terms of government spending and taxes, as well as monetary policy. And the reason I say that is, if you want a booming economy or a peaceful and prosperous economy, if that is your goal and you want you want growth rates higher than the historical trend of about 3.3%, if that's your goal and that's what you want, what the federal government needs to do is reduce the uncertainty in the economy. It manifestly has not done that. It hasn't. It has slightly reduced it, but not much. And where does the uncertainty come from? The fact that we're now in our 5th year, we've had 5 years in a row of massive deficit. We haven't had a balanced budget. And at the rate we're going, we're not going to have a balanced budget for another 10 years. And that might be optimistic. So that creates uncertainty, because you can't keep doing what the federal government has been doing for the last 5 years. Because ultimately what happens is you're going to get a shock that's going to, what's called an exogenous shock to the economy. Think of it as something breaking, and who knows what it's going to be. But when that happens, you're going to see several things. Your real GDP will turn negative. And like I said, we're overdue for that. And we've had this is by far the worst economic post-World War II recovery. Because we've had persistently high unemployment rates of above 7%. It's at 7.2%. And that's very, very misleading, because the primary reason that the unemployment rate has gone down is the fact that people are discouraged, or they're marginally attached to the labor force. They're working part-time jobs. They can't find full-time jobs. And my sound engineer is about leaving. I have to wrap this show up, and I just really got started, but I came in a little late. He says I can keep on going, so I'll keep on going. So we've had the worst economic recovery. We've had persistently high unemployment rates. We've had mediocre growth rates in terms of the economy. And what I was going to get into, and I'll probably develop this tomorrow, is we're literally at the highest poverty rates that we've ever had in the United States in terms of number of people as well as the rate. Although there's been some improvement, it hit 15%, it's gone down a little bit. But what's happened is the U.S. Census Bureau came out with another definition of poverty. And by their definition, there are 49.7 million Americans in poverty. I don't have time to get into the numbers, but they have, depending on the size of the family, whether it's one person, two, three, four, five, how many children you have in your family, they figure every year what it takes to, what's the poverty amount. For example, a single person, in round numbers, one person is around $10,500. Not much money. And it's higher for if you have more people. The point I'm trying to make is, I'm not going to get into discussion of the, because you look it up and I'll have it on my prompt pops.wordpress blog. I'll post that as a second segment, and I have the numbers there so you can look them up. I don't have them in front of me right now, and I don't have them in my head, but they're not very high. The key point is whether you do, and that's not the effect, this is a proposed redefinition of what poverty is in the United States. And on that new definition, this was in the news this week. That's why I'm bringing it up. We're close to hitting 50 million people. That's over 16% of the U.S. population. That's discouraging. I think you'd have to go back to the Great Depression to find poverty rates this high. And what that means is what's happening is we've had really a culture, really a society of government dependency. Because one of the answers to this is to throw money at it, to increase food stamp programs, to increase SSI, Supplemental Security Income programs, increase subsidies for, you know, these are people that are poor, they get welfare. That's what we used to call it, and it should be called. That's what it is. Because people simply don't have a job, they earn either no money or very little money, so they go to the government and they get handouts. The problem is it becomes a habit, and we have millions of people that fall in that category. Now, many of them are children. I'm not against welfare per se, but the problem is we have many, many people that, for lack of a better word, they're not trying to get a job. They're fully capable of working. Now, part of the problem is just the job situation. That's why I led off with this. But the answer seems to be, it's kind of a standard answer, well, we need to have more food stamps, more and lenient criteria for getting supplemental security income, more subsidized housing, and more Medicaid if you have medical problems. Okay, so I'm going to have to wrap it up. So tomorrow I'll get into what's my theme, and my theme is that standard answer by the Progressive Democratic Party is more and more and more and more programs and higher spending on these programs to address poverty. And it started with Lyndon Baines Johnson, President Johnson, late President Johnson, in 65. It started with a war on poverty. And then we had a war on drugs, a war on terror, a war on terrorism. And lately the Democrats have a war on women. They're accusing the Republicans of that, which is a joke. And that's the subject of another program. The point is, what the people need to declare is a war on Washington. Because what has happened is the size of the federal government has gotten bigger and bigger. Although right now it's trending down in terms of percent of GDP, be the first one to recognize it, it's still unsustainable in terms of taxes. Because why the long-term growth rate is about 3.3% in terms of revenues, and this is over many decades, whether it's high, medium, or low tax rates, the federal government typically collects around 18% or 18.2% of revenues, and that's as a percentage of GDP. But we're spending right now at over 21%. What I maintain, the problem is Washington, D.C. The problem is big government, because what does big government foster? It forces not only dependency, that you've become dependent on the government for these handouts, including supplemental nutrition assistance program, what most people will call food stamps, what's now called SNAP with a card. That's for food. You can have also programs that where you get cash, programs where you get job training, programs where you will get housing. All this means that other taxpayer dollars, money is taken out from other people's checks and given to other people. That's not the answer. The long-range answer is better, more and more jobs, a growing economy. So you want to have the conditions of a growing economy. And what that means is reducing uncertainty. And the big uncertainty generator is Washington, D.C., with ever and ever growing government in terms of its size and its scope. And you see that in, year out, deficits, never a balanced budget, but deficits of hundreds of billions of dollars that you can't keep doing. Because the reason you can't keep doing, at some point in time, inflation is going to come roaring back and interest rates are going to skyrocket. And at that point, the cost of paying or carrying the debt will explode. And it will literally force most, if not all, of these programs to be drastically cut. It's not sustainable. You got to confront reality. See, good intentions are not enough. What counts is results. The best, if you want to get people out of poverty, the best thing to do is to have an economy that needs them to work, that where there's many, many jobs. Jobs are going begging. That's not the situation we have now. I got to wrap it up. I'll have my next program will be from 3 to 5 tomorrow, and it'll probably be a longer program because I have some more space on the other side. I really just got started. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Prunk, the presenter of the Prunk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Until tomorrow at 3, I hope this has been informative and education, and now back to the music.